Hi there, Origin Podcast listeners. Prashant here. Sorry for the long hiatus, but we've been busy here at Origin. Four of our companies have raised over $130 million in growth capital in the past few months, and we've also made a number of new investments. Today, I'm catching up with Jack Vines, founder and CEO of our portfolio company, Bonsai Analytics, which is based in Salt Lake City and is building a new approach to cyber insurance. We chat about Jack's views of the cyber insurance landscape, his time at the CIA, why Utah is the perfect place for a startup, and his days as a sports writer. Hope you enjoy. Okay. Hey, Jack. Good afternoon.
Hey, Prashant. It's good to hear you.
Good to hear from you as well, and thanks for doing this. I gave a brief introduction of you earlier, but why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on yourself and who you are and what you're building at Bonsai Analytics?
Sure. So my name is Jack Vines. My background has been kind of at that weird intersection between cybersecurity and insurance. I spent a good chunk of my career both at Microsoft and then in the government and the CIA working in cybersecurity, both offensive and defensive. And then about 5-6 years ago, I was in a startup that we sold into a data analytic company called Verisk Analytics. And so I got to see the inner workings of how insurance works. And it just, there was this natural intersection that I saw between sort of the problems that are emerging in cyber insurance and how kind of the infancy of how insurers were looking at the risks that they were underwriting. And so that was the genesis for how we started Bonsai.
Got it. And For those of us who are less tech savvy or don't know as much about cybersecurity and cyber insurance, what is cyber insurance? What is cybersecurity? And you know, what does the landscape look like today? What kind of products do people buy? What's good about it? What's bad about it? Et cetera.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, cybersecurity and specifically incidents have really caught a lot of the headlines over the last year between some of the bigger breaches, whether it's Target or, you know, Experian. You see a lot of those pieces of it. But really what cyber insurance is trying to do and has been trying to do for a while is cover some of the basic expenses that go with a breach. And so that's things like, you know, forensic expenses to figure out what happened after the breach, the legal side of insurance, credit monitoring, public relations expenses. That's really been kind of the traditional realm of what the insurance has been trying to do. And as you've seen, you know, both in the news and then probably a lot of people have experienced this as if they've had their identity stolen, what you're starting to realize is there's this massive play where data has become the lifeblood of how people interact. It's how companies transact business. It's how people, people share information. And so as there's more and more data out there, it becomes more and more exposed. And so because of that, that's why there's been this escalation, whether it's ransomware events you've seen, whether in Baltimore or the municipalities in Texas, or people's identity stolen, it's turning into a daily occurrence. And so I would say cyber insurance is in its infancy, but I think that there's a massive growing trend of incidents. And so where there's incidents, insurance tries to cover that. And that's what we're doing at Bonsai.
Got it. Okay. And, you know, obviously cyber insurance isn't new. The product's been around for a while. You know, why do you think that there's an opportunity to build a company in the sector? Are the current products and services not good enough?
Yeah, I actually firmly believe that. And you stated it accurately. Cyber insurance has probably been around for going on 15 or 20 years. But you know, really how it's been calculated to date, because if you think about all the different things that could go into having someone steal your information or having your servers locked up, it's a pretty complicated problem. And so what insurers have done traditionally is they've gone to the lowest common denominator and they've said, you know, there's five basic things for cyber insurance. They usually ask, what's the name of your company? How many employees do you have? They ask about your revenue. Sometimes they ask about what data, sometimes they don't. And then they'll just get a certification from your CIO or CISO around whether you guys consider yourself mature in how you protect yourself, which is all subjective. And the reason they do that is because the other challenge would be to go the other end of the spectrum and try to quantify this. And so the way they protect themselves is by putting pretty narrow coverages like I outlined before, and then putting pretty low limits on it. And so that's how the industry's kind of bounced along for the last 15, 20 years. And it's just recently where you started to see startups engage in this, because with the consolidation of companies moving to cloud platforms, you start to see a lot more security tools in the cyberspace that are giving more visibility to data. You know, that we believe at Bonsai wholeheartedly that we're at this really big inflection point in the industry where the data and the standardization is at the point where you can start to make real decisions around insurance that you weren't able to do even 3-4 years ago.
Got it. And to give people a sense of, you know, the dollars that we're talking about here, you know, some of the biggest breaches in the last few years we've heard of around maybe Target or Equifax, you know, how much is that costing a company like Target? Obviously there's the consumer angle, and it's terrible that, you know, people's data was compromised, but how much is it, you know, in dollars and cents costing, for example, Target?
So, you know, the numbers on that vary wildly. The big thing that I forgot to highlight earlier on this is what you have because of those limits and narrow coverages, you have this massive gap between the actual damage that Target sustained. So that was, you know, losing employee, customer information, the fines associated with that, the reputational damage, the needs to upgrade all of their systems. You know, that was in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. Same with Equifax. And then their coverage was significantly lower than that. And so, you know, those are on obviously the larger end of the spectrum. And then, you know, on the everyday events, you know, they could be in the, you know, the low hundreds of thousands, depending on if it's say, an e-commerce site that gets a little bit of traffic that has their information stolen, or in the case of some of these municipalities in either Florida or in Texas, that's, you know, that could be in the hundreds of thousands to low millions. So it really depends on the event. But what we're seeing just as a general trend is a proliferation in the number of events that are happening and more sophistication on the side of the people going after the information.
Got it. So it sounds like there's a little bit of kind of systemic or chronic underinsurance, especially when we see these large scale hacks. You know, limits and coverages just aren't enough for some of these big enterprises, which if it's not enough for something like Target or Equifax, we can just imagine what it looks like for, you know, the smaller SMB and mid-market enterprises out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with that, which is a company like Target, while they don't obviously want to ever have an event like that happen, they have the resources to handle that type of event, both internally and financially. But when you start to talk about, you know, up in, you know, small and mid-market technology companies, for instance, you know, an event like that, both from a systems perspective and then a reputational perspective, could be the end of the company. I mean, it's sometimes that dire, just because it's one of those problems where if you have an event and you don't handle it right, it could be the end of your business.
Makes sense. Whenever we talk about insurance or we hear insurance, you know, regulation is a big part of that. We know that all kinds of insurance products are regulated to varying degrees by different regulatory bodies. You know, what are some of the trends that are going to help you and your business, or, you know, how are those trends going to affect the cyber insurance landscape moving forward?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'd say up until now, cyber insurance has a little bit been the wild, wild west. It's the regulators, both in the European Union and the US, kind of grasping to figure out how they should put regulations on the books to help consumers. And then on the other side of it, it's been really a challenge for insurers to figure out, what should I cover? How does this actually affect someone? How does a breach to an e-commerce site, what is the business interruption for this? What is the reputational damage? And so what you've seen, you know, Facebook's a good example, where as events start to happen, regulators start to take notice, and you start to see privacy regulations coming. And so I'm not usually a fan of regulations, but in this industry, in this specific market, I think it's necessary. So you start to see things like in the European Union, you have the GDPR regulations that give put the onus on a company to to be able to securely manage and share with the consumer what information they have about them. And I think if you think about a general trend in regulations, you're going to see more and more of these coming on that are in, you know, they're advocates for the consumers, saying that you can't just take my data and use it any way you want to. You have to tell me how you're using it. You have to be transparent about what you're doing with the data. And as you rightly said in your question, when those sorts of things come on the books, it becomes easier for insurance to quantify that. And so that's why you're seeing an uptick in cyber insurance. In fact, it's by far the fastest growing insurance vertical by a long shot. It's growing at about a 32% year over year growth in revenue. And what's driving that a lot is companies realizing and boards of directors and executive teams realizing that they need this. It's large companies, say in the healthcare space, realizing that they need to put some coverage around their vendors. It's a general awareness that this is a bigger problem than people realize, and the consequences are more dire. And so those are all winds that are kind of blowing the sails of this industry.
The mission of the regulatory bodies, though, is more about protecting consumers, right, than it is about making sure businesses don't lose more money when a breach does occur, right? So the tailwinds behind the growth of the cyber insurance market then must be, like what you said, enterprises themselves, boards of directors, realizing that their businesses need to have better coverage. And of course, the regulatory bodies are helping because they care about consumer privacy and protection of data and, you know, knowing where that data goes and who's using it and leveraging it. So I guess there's kind of multiple things layered on here that are kind of driving that growth overall of the cyber insurance industry. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, that's very fair. As you said, at the heart of what regulators are trying to do is protect the consumer. And as you see more and more large companies, their backbone of what drives their revenue is data, and it's data from consumers. And so I think for a long time, you had a lot of companies out there that were collecting consumer data and using that data in a way that the consumers weren't aware. And so that's where you're starting to see those types of, you know, the government stepping in to put regulations in place to monitor that. I also don't think it's just regulators that are driving the insurance space. I think it's an overall awareness of the risk and getting an understanding of what the potential problems are. And it's companies that, you know, for a long time didn't see themselves as a data company, but then started collecting, you know, but they were just a shoe company. But all of a sudden behind the scenes, now they realize they have all this data that they're using to drive their decisions. And that data needs to be protected and it needs to be insured. And so there's a lot of different things that are driving this industry, as you rightly said.
Got it. So I want to talk a little bit about something you mentioned in your intro. You know, you spent a few years, or like 5 years, you know, in the CIA. How did that experience, or how does that experience inform, you know, being a founder and a CEO today?
You know, it's funny. I went for a long time where I couldn't even tell my parents what I did. And so it's always funny to me when you start talking on either a podcast or in a speaking engagement around being in the CIA. But I think it hit me on a number of levels. One, I think I got a lot of visibility to what the potential dangers were out there in cyber. I got to see firsthand all the different ways that things could go wrong, honestly, and how vulnerable we really are. And I don't want to make that a scare tactic. It's just more reality. I think on the other part, on more of a personal level, as a founder and first-time CEO, I think, you know, that job I always said was, you know, 90% boredom, 5% really interesting, and 5% sheer terror. And so I think what it taught me was it taught me to put everything in perspective. And so you're going to have lots of ups and downs. There's going to be stuff that you did not expect to happen. I always said that some of the crazy stuff that I ended up having happened to me or was a part of, you wouldn't believe it if you saw it on a television show. But I think what it taught me was to put everything in perspective, to be able to roll with the ups and downs and just keep the mission in focus. And I think as a founder and CEO, you're going to have those days where things don't go right or you have a problem that you didn't expect, and you can let it crash your day. You can let it affect, you know, the next two weeks of your business, or you can think about it. You can be rational about it and you can make decisions and move on. And so, I think it's been really grounding.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, you made a pretty deliberate decision in starting Banzai Analytics to do so in Utah and Salt Lake City. And I'm curious about that for a few reasons. You know, first being, why did you select Salt Lake City to start your company?
Yeah, I think I've gotten the chance through the job in the CIA to live and travel all over the world. And I'm not from Utah. I didn't grow up here, but I came out here and I realized there was an interesting opportunity. We're very, very close to the San Francisco and the West Coast. You have a really, really strong educated workforce. You have a very hard working workforce. And you also have a state that really wants to bring in business. And so when it comes to starting a business here, you have the right mixture of strong talent. You have an investment climate that really wants to support you. It's just a really unique situation. And like I mentioned in the beginning, you're really close to San Francisco. And so because of that, you have a lot of this crossover between some of the technology investors and startups that are there. They've been coming over here because there's just a huge opportunity to start businesses here in a positive way.
What about some of the lifestyle or activities that you can pursue in Utah, outdoors in particular?
Yeah, I was. That's the piece that I think that's the hidden secret that I don't like to bring up sometimes, because from my office to my favorite ski area, which is Alta Ski Area, it's a 30-minute drive, and so it's not uncommon for me to meet some friends in the parking lot at the base of the mountain and climb a mountain, ski down, grab a cup of coffee, and be in the office by 8:30. So that kind of quality of life balance is really, I think it's great for a couple of things. It's good for me because it feeds my soul, but also when it comes to attracting talent, the fact that you're not going to sit in gridlock traffic and you're going to get to, if you like the outdoors, it's right in your backyard is a huge draw.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know that Utah is an important ecosystem for us. You know, one of our partners is out there. We're building out a bigger presence and office. So if I were to ask you, you know, what the ecosystem looks like in 5, 10, 15 years, it's already come a long way in the last decade or so in terms of building out, you know, a bigger presence in technology and bigger technology outcomes in companies. But what do you see happening in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you have a couple of things going. I mean, Utah for a long time if you think about the ecosystem, was a little bit of a lower cost labor market. But I think what's happened is that drew really interesting companies to Utah and really interesting founders that had a lot of successes. And what it did is it put Utah on the map for a number of reasons. And one of which is you can build strong, successful, SaaS businesses and data analytic businesses here and get the talent to really fuel those businesses. And so, Utah over the next 10 to 15 years is going to have the largest population growth of any city percentage wise in the US. And so what you're going to see is a lot more people coming here. The universities, there's a number of universities here that are feeding, that are getting better and better and feeding really good talent into the ecosystem. And what you're also seeing because of its proximity to the West Coast is a lot of people that maybe were either priced out of the market or wanted to get out of the traffic or wanted to, like you rightly said, that work-life balance are coming over here. And so you're seeing this really huge influx of talent. And so the types of businesses and I guess if I think about the 10 years I've been here, just the ecosystem has grown exponentially in terms of the people I have access to and the conversations I can have with fellow founders and the people I can bring on my team.
Got it. Yeah. You know, I know you closed your seed round earlier this year and we were a part of that. But I want to ask, you know, what are the things that you look for or looked for in investors and look for, you know, what's important to you? You've met a fair number of venture capital investors. You mentioned San Francisco a few times, and there's, I think, a few venture capitalists in San Francisco. So, you know, I'm curious what your overall experiences have been interacting with them and what's important to you when you think about partnering with someone who brings capital, but of course a lot else.
Yeah, I think you rightly state. I think there's a lot of ecosystems. When I was looking at starting Banzai just through my network, I mean, I was looking a lot in the Bay Area. I was looking in New York, even a little bit overseas. And so when I was thinking about ecosystems and types of partners that would be really good for us, is people that one, I think are, that have a strong subject matter expertise and also a strong intellectual curiosity to dig in and partner with you. And I think that's the number one thing. I think as I got into conversations all over the world on starting Bonsai, I think it wasn't a matter of finding the money, but it was finding the right partners that wanted to work with you. As you rightly said, we're a seed startup. And so there's a lot of things that we need and we need to grow, and that, you know, having a partner that has seen this happen, has seen successful companies grow and is willing to, you know, walk alongside you as you're doing that and realize that things are, you know, kind of rocky at the beginning as you're trying to get your feet under you is key. And so I think for me, it was about finding partners that believed in what we were doing, believed in the mission, and were willing to roll up their sleeves and partner with us to grow Bonsai, to go after this huge market. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to have Origin as part of our team. And it's definitely the skills that you guys brought to complement what we're doing at Bonsai, I think is a really nice natural fit.
Got it. So one thing I like to ask people sometimes is, you know, a fun fact that people may not know about you, but, you know, in this case, you've already kind of covered your background in the CIA, but I'm going to ask anyway, you know, is there anything else that people may not know about you or wouldn't be obvious, you know, if somebody spent 10 or 20 minutes with you?
That's a good question, actually. So, yeah, I think the CIA piece usually becomes a good conversation point, but I think some other interesting facts. Early in my career, I was a sports writer. I thought I was going to be a journalist my entire career, and I was actually I was working for the Seattle Mariners at the time after I graduated from college, and I was at this point of thinking I was going to do that long term, and I was sitting up in the press box during a long Mariners homestand, and I was telling this Associated Press writer that I was going to be, this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And he grabbed my arm and kind of gave me this like very serious look, because he'd been doing this for 34 years, and pointed down the third baseline and said, you know, look down there. And he points down right behind the dugout and said, you know, see that couple down there? That's my wife. That's my daughter. And that's her husband. She works for Microsoft and he's a lawyer. He's like, you can be like me and come 2 hours before the game and stay 2 hours later, or you can be like them and show up in the third inning, have a hot dog in one hand and a beer in the other, and you know, be them, don't be me. And so it was this really seminal moment where I actually, where I took a pivot and I took it seriously. And next thing I know, you know, here we are 15, 20 years later, I'm starting Bonsai. So I became very close to being a sports writer.
Okay. Well, that is an interesting story for sure. Well, Jack, thanks a lot for taking the time out of your busy startup schedule and travel schedule to chat with us. Really appreciate it, and look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, Prashant. I enjoyed it. Have a good day.